Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Yes, that's who I am. So, first, before our splendiferous guest, we are cross-pollinating soon betwixt the Bioneers Conference, you know, a fantabulous conference of people doing effective good in the world. It's so heartening. Thursday, April 6th at 9 p.m. at Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. Free to everyone. Me, Amakayla Gaston, and Brianna DeMar, our next week's radio guests. Majnun, Trickster Guide to Necessary Miracles. Music and metaphor be the incarnational garb whereby power is invited into the world. April 13th at 6 p.m., me at Open Secret, Citizen Trickster Council. Advanced reservations, Rob at opensecretbookstore.com, and the New Living Expo. I'll be presenting Saturday, April 15th at the Embassy Suites in San Rafael, Bodhisattva Coyote Brer Rabbit Rumi, Guide to Being a Good Citizen Trickster, that all of our skills be available to us, newlivingexpo.com. But here, also a participant in the New Living Expo, we welcome Louis Schwartzberg, incarnational agent of Jupiter and Neptune, curiosity and wonder, cultural storyteller, award-winning Pisces, cinematographer, director, producer, creator of the film Fantastic Fungi, and more. But that's such a great movie, one can show it to anyone in Florida at Republican conferences. Truly, it's a wonderful thing. So let's bless Louis's ever-deepening dedication to the unfurling, intelligent beauty of our flora, fauna, fungi kin, using time-lapse, high-speed, and macro cinematography techniques. So we are here now, and we're grateful, incarnationally coinciding, to honor and animate the unfurling, enhanced cultural receptivity for all to which Louis be dedicated as a liberating gift to us all. A reciprocal blessing of gratitude to be spiraled forth into ever-increasing cultural influence, Louis is generously proffering his latest film, Gratitude Revealed, at the New Living Expo, and that will be April 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., Room 6 at the Embassy Suites in San Rafael, and he will be zooming in for conversing after the showing. So, welcome, Louis.
Wow. Well, that is the most elegant, mystical, spiritual introduction I've ever heard. And I really appreciate it, Carolyn. I mean, I've heard you speak at Bioneers, and I would say don't give up the hosting job because you've got a career as a full-time, you know, comedic stand-up comic as well.
Oh, bless your heart. That means a lot because you have beautiful and generous high standards. So I am so grateful to your movie. Let me just set up a little bit. So I've been running these election magic councils with my colleague, Pat Ewing, who is a great spiritual person engaged in political organizing. And she said, what is the antonym to grievance? And I go, oh, what a good question. Right, because the right-wing authoritarian, everything, the toxic mimic of community known as a cult, you know, runs on grievance. And of course, the antonym of grievance is gratitude, right? So,
I just went, wow, because, you know, I do feel, you know, like the film about gratitude, people have asked, like, you know, it's not really intended to be political, but I do believe a film that celebrates human values, a film that celebrates the human spirit, a film that, you know, shows remarkable but ordinary people that are not famous all across America, blue states, red states, you know?
Yeah.
That is a very political movie because it shows that there isn't that separateness between us and that sense of other and that we all want the same things, you know, a healthy environment, the best for our children. And so, you know, I don't intentionally try to make a quote-unquote political film, but I love how what you just described here, that the antonym to grievance is gratitude, is that if you really want to fight that fight, then I think you really have to sort of do it with, you know, kill them with love.
Or dance that dance, possibly. But yeah, we expand everything the more words.
I didn't want to use the word kill, but you know what I mean. Like it's a very kind of Buddhist approach, right, of being able to use kindness to try to change people's awareness, be more mindful and more conscious.
No, it's beautiful. And as my friend Deborah Falmouth, living in Syria and Vermont, says, salam, peace. It's not the absence of conflict. It's the presence of oneness. And that's really what your movie does in all these many glorious forms of expression. It's like we're all in this dream together. So many beautiful things in gratitude revealed. And maybe we just also right now want to do an honoring of the ancestors and an honoring of your ancestral parents from whom you gleaned so much, from their gratitude having survived so much.
Well, I think growing up with parents that are Holocaust survivors, it certainly taught me a lot about, you know, gratitude and being grateful, because they appreciated all the little things in life, you know, food on the table, a roof over your head, a steady job, the miracle of being able to have children, given what they went through. All of that, you know, set me on a course of appreciating life, wanting to also fight against anything that talks about extinction either of race or, you know, religions or insects or microbes or fungi. I mean, I want to just, you know, stand up for the little guys that need to be protected. And it's the little guys and the little things you discover that really makes the world go round. You know, like without our pollinators, without the fungi, as we saw in Fantastic Fungi, and pollinators and wings of life, that is the foundation of life on the planet. You know, it's not about the top of the food chain, us lions and tigers. If we don't have, you know, that intersection, for example, that gives us the healthy food we need to eat, well, then nobody survives. And so appreciating the little things, and boy, did the pandemic really bring that home. You know, things we took for granted, being able to have dinner with your friends or family or see them. That sense of disconnection really, I think, emphasized how we take for granted things like family, connection, relationships, and that's what gratitude is really all about.
Yes. No, absolutely. And there was gratitude even in the, I was grateful that I'm so familiar with solitude, right? It's like, oh, I'm very lucky. No, and then just a little, you know, just to, again, honor your parents and all who survived, and you're honoring, you know, let adversity be an incentive to experiment, to create greater blessing in the world. And the only sensible boyfriend I ever had, Jacob Pearl, now an ancestor, alas, but his parents held hands and jumped off the train that was taking them to Auschwitz, right? And they spent the war literally underground in a hidden basement in Poland. And they were the kindest people. And Jacob grew up to be not a doctor like his brother, where they were like, why can't you be a doctor, but a Zen master. And I mean, a real one. And I just wanted to extend the kinship, you know, between him and you and the parents of people who've survived so much, who went on to do great dedicated community good. You know, it's like you received the gift from them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, my mom was remarkable. She spent almost 5 years in Auschwitz, and she had so much joy in her life, and the stories that I have in Gratitude Revealed are inspired by my parents, because I love to tell stories about people who overcome adversity but still have joy and hope in their life. It's called resilience as well. And so those are the stories that not only did I love, but my mom, she, you know, in elementary school, all my friends would want to come over to my house after school, because she was a real Yiddish mama. She would like feed him with, you know, milk and cookies. Everybody loved her smile. She had an accent, and, you know, sometimes it was maybe hard to understand her English, but, you know, she worked all day at a senior living, you know, home as a cook for like 60 residents. She took care of all of us, made our lunches and our meals, cleaned the house. Never once did I ever hear her say she was tired or didn't have energy, because she was so grateful and in love with the fact that she could do what she was doing.
You know, it's also a longtime guest from way back, Martine Prechtel, said the greatest blessings come from those who have experienced the greatest adversity. And that's what he said. He would take his students into prisons to receive blessings. And after we did that show, I got this wonderful letter from San Quentin saying, we heard the show and we've gathered together in a sweat lodge to send you and your show blessing. I'm like, oh, there's someone. And you do honor people in prison, and you honor the mm-hmm. Glide Church and its exaltation.
Right.
And it's like Eddie Izzard says, you know, you have people who have all the blessings in the world, you know, the British Church of England, and they're like, hallelujah. And all these people who've undergone incredible suffering who are like, hallelujah, hallelujah. Right, and we want, that's what you really convey, going, right, right.
Yeah.
And then there are also famous people in your movie. I love Norman Lear, but we all love learning more, like, I didn't know that Norman Lear's father went to prison when Norman Lear was five. And he
right.
said he lived with his uncles, and the only way he could pay them for appreciatively was to make them laugh, right? And
mm-hmm.
that's. And no, then he talks about the.
Go on, Carolyn.
Well, I was just going to hand it back to you, saying that Norman Lear, a wonderful person, coming from Hardscrabble, right? He speaks about what's important, you know, to you, and then you guide
right.
us, you know, to all of it, yeah. the horizontal journey and the vertical journey. Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Lynn Twist talks a lot about, just people that live in circumstances of scarcity, you know, those folks really do, you know, develop a tremendous amount of gratitude and resilience, and they're both kind of interconnected. You know, studies have shown that people who practice gratitude are more resilient. They bounce back faster, either from a, you know, physiological mishap, you know, a diagnosis that's severe, or somebody bumped their car in the morning and, you know, they have to go to the insurance guy and figure out how to get it fixed. That could be a bummer for some people for days. Other people, it's like no big deal. Being able to bounce back, and you see that also in nature. I love watching the weeds that grow up and the cracks in the sidewalk, their determination, their resilience. Again, in tough circumstances, they're able to, like, you know, flourish and survive. I admire all that energy, life force energy that says, I'm here, I'm going to make it, and I'm unstoppable.
Yeah, life force, enthusiasm, and, excuse me, generosity. I love the saying, you know, some stranger remembers you because you were kind to them. We go, right, right. And I love in Syria, the Bedouin greeting is, hello, hello, stranger, change your direction and come this way. You know, and, you know, for us to mm-hmm. tease that into here, that we reframe, you know, refugees as pilgrims. And if we were more Bedouin, we would say, you know, welcome. You must have endured so much and seen so much. You must have so many stories. And they must be the stories we need. Please come in. And
right.
and you're very story crafter, right? That it's a ministry of expanded stories that you're embodying, right?
Oh, that's a beautiful way of looking at it. I kind of sometimes feel it's almost like, you know, the fantasy of if you could just have the freedom to hitchhike across the country and you bump into remarkable but ordinary people, you know, in rural areas and areas, you know, that you don't normally think of going, and you have incredible experiences. And in a way, I think Gratitude Revealed is like that string of pearls I put together of meeting, you know, serendipitously all kinds of amazing people from all walks of life. And you kind of get, and the audience gets to experience the magic moment. It's really the creme de la creme. It's like the you know, you don't have to go through the whole intro. Well, who are you and how long have you been here? We sort of get to drop in and hang out with them at their peak moment of sharing their wisdom. And it's up to us to kind of lean in and figure out, how do we integrate that into our lives, or what what does that mean to me? Because what's great about the movie, I feel, is that it doesn't tell anyone like what to do. It doesn't tell anyone how to practice gratitude, you know, which I think is important. I mean, we actually have an educational curriculum that, you know, we give to teachers and schools and parents with practices and guidance for all of that. And I support all of that, which, by the way, is based on the science from UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center. So it's really great, hardcore, relevant, truthful information. But in the movie, it's all about feeling these emotional connections you have with different people and what they've gone through and what they're passionate about and what they love. And then it's up to you to kind of be molded or shaped by it in terms of what you want to, you know, mine out of that experience. And that's what I think you're describing with this Bedouin story. People come into your home, you sit down, share food, and you hear their stories. And how does that shape your worldview?
And it's very much you as an agent of storytelling and gratitude. You know, it's like in all mythologies, it says, you know, everywhere you go, even to the underworld, when you meet demons or anybody, or even Republicans, you go, what's your story? What's your story?
Yeah.
And so much through your dedicated work, you know, it's like the world is alive with story. And everything speaking to us that you so beautifully show by its shape and its color and its song and its rhythm. And if we humans just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be okay as a species,
yep.
Right? And that's your ministry.
Well, thank you. I'm just trying to channel and be in the flow with.
Yeah.
I think nature's operating instructions. I mean, I appreciate the way people say the film is beautiful, but it's not like pretty, superficial beauty. That beauty is what orchestrates this, you know, dance of life and makes us want to celebrate life and makes us want to engage. It triggers the emotions that makes us, you know, want life to go forward. That's why babies are cute and kittens are cute. Puppies are cute because we're hardwired to love. And triggering that emotion is, I think, the way we get people to make the right choices and protect what they love, like the environment, like your culture, your history, your family. So I'm very aware of the fact that the lighting, the composition, the color, the editing, all of that is designed to seduce you to fall in love with the world in order to protect it or nature.
That's the crucial thing. Yeah, there's nothing more important than that right now, you know. And that's why we love your expanded cultural influence and the expanded receptivity to your dedication. It's so wonderful. And let's just remind people that you can see this wonderful movie, Louis Schwartzberg movie, Gratitude Revealed, on April 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., room 6 at the Embassy Suites in San Rafael, if you register at newlivingexpo.com. And you will generously be zooming in to converse. Converse, a wonderful word, because it means turning together. So that's very generous and good of you, right? So because everybody then becomes an ambassador.
Well, thank you. And for those that are far away from Northern California, I just wanted to say they could also go to gratitudereveal.com and see where there might be screenings in their area of the world as well, both physical and virtual.
Well, I love in so many of your films, this one included, and certainly in Fantastic Fungi, showing the unfurling, right? Like the unfurling of the fiddle fern, you know, it's like, whoa. And it's John O'Donohue who says that, you know, at a new beginning, you know, unfurl yourself into this new beginning, holding nothing back. And it's like, that's an astounding exhortation, right? To unfurl, holding nothing back. Right, but that's kind of what you do, and that's what you show, yeah?
Yeah, well, and that visual also triggers, you know, Jack, I think it was Jack Kornfield, you know, so it's just, you know, having trust in life and letting it unfold. I love the idea of letting your life unfold in front of you, and having trust, and you know, sometimes letting go of, you know, pressing hard on the accelerator and make this happen and make that happen. But that fern is an example of how life does unfold and how the universe can maybe, you know, put the path in front of you that you need to follow.
Yeah. It's like one of the best translations of the Tao Te Ching by a scholar named Witter Binner. He says, let life ripen and then fall. Force is not the way at all. It's like, right, there we go.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's very beautiful and heartening. And again, you go to so many great places. You spend you know, time in jazz in New Orleans, and you know, that defiant celebration, pageantry, music, you know, even right after Katrina, you know, just, you know, pageants, music, right? I hosted a wonderful guy who was old-time New Orleans right after Katrina, and he was keeping the museum of costumes and feathers and things. And he said, you know, people say, you know, you all need water after this disaster, but I think we need, you know, art and music and pleasure. It's the center of the community. And then all these NGO people kind of called in or chimed in and said, that's actually true. We can't come in to help a community without an infrastructure, and art and beauty and music create that structure that then allows help to come in. That's very wonderful. So you do spend a lot of time in jazz in New Orleans, and humor, and that beautiful clip, the oldest synagogue in America, you know, praying for the ancestors. And I think it's an oboe. Is it an oboe that
clarinet is playing? A clarinet.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes. Clarinet, ecstatic yearning. We love ecstatic yearning coming out of that beautiful oldest synagogue in America, praying for the ancestors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all food. And you spend some time you know, about what's happiness. And again, I love in Arabic, I was asking a friend whose name was Saeed, and I go, well, mabsut means happy. And he said, you say mabsut mazbut, of course I'm happy. of course I'm happy. And he said, mabsut means content. Saeed means happy with the entire whole thing. It's like, oh, what a beautiful name, right? Saeed. Anyway, so I'm happy with the whole thing. And we go, that's great. And then, yes, well, what you said, it's not a political film, right? And we don't even need to mention that word, except I brought it up for fun. But the antonym of grievance, right, to suck the chi out of grievance and guide it, you know, back into gratitude. And then we also get what you're honoring, gratitude and grief do go together. And I've been working, you know, on discerning, you know, going, right, well, grievance really, you know, separates and broods and creates kind of vengeance and, you know, resentment, you know, whereas grief is really love, yeah?
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel that a lot of times sometimes people ask, what's the difference between, let's say, appreciation and gratitude? And I feel like appreciation is what you feel in the moment, and gratitude is what we feel in our hearts. It's like I look back at, like, the Thanksgiving dinner or some other, you know, warm event that occurred in my life, and that's where I kind of feel the gratitude, is being able to kind of savor it, nurture it in my heart, have a maybe like a deeper, overwhelming emotional understanding. And that appreciation, I kind of feel, is a beautiful thing, obviously, but more in the moment, more like thank you and I appreciate you. But gratitude, I feel, is like going deeper and, you know, understanding, not only being turned on by the beauty of what you're looking at, but also the science behind it, or, you know, the reason it's there, and all the different, you know, viewpoints that you can look at something as simple as a bee landing on a flower and get really deep into what all of that symbolizes. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that it's happening in front of me. I'm so grateful I get to witness it. I'm so grateful that, you know, I've got five fingers that move, I can walk, I can breathe, which automatically pulls me out of a negative spiral, you know, which is where we are right now, where there is a lot of despair, in and a mental health crisis coming out of the pandemic, coming out of the environmental, you know, climate, you know, danger that we face, and the political discourse that's in the toilet. All of that, it makes it understandable why people would have despair. But so how do we get out of it? And I think gratitude is a baby step in the right direction to put a positive thought in your head, however small that might be, to just put a pause on the negative stuff that we ruminate on, given the world we live in right now.
Yes, and we might say, or and you explore, you know, gratitude maybe spontaneous, like, ah, and then also cultivated, right? Which is, and you're doing both, right? You're allowing us to go, ah, and then let's dedicate to cultivating this quality of curiosity and wonder and, you know, and opening in that way. And so, yeah, and I'm very fond also of bad boy comedian Jim Jeffries, who says, you know, I spent so much of my life depressed. I couldn't even get out of bed in my 20s and 40s. And I asked my dad, who was in his late 70s, like, you know, why aren't you depressed? And he goes, well, what you going to do? And Jeffries says, I realize all you have to do is outlive your depression. Right? He said, you know, 20s and 40s, people are like, oh, I can't get out of bed. But people in their 90s are like, I'm up. It's a miracle. Right. So I love him saying all we have to do is outlive our depression. And maybe as humans right now, we could just sort of declare that, going, all right, regardless of temporary age and race and gender, let's say we've outlived our depression. And here comes Louis's movie. There's so much to marvel about. And then maybe this leads us to the realm of entheogens and their cultural assist at gratitude. And I love this, you know, riptide that we're in of science proving folklore. And, you know, we'll come back after the break to do more, you know, and Stamets and Johns Hopkins and what. But do you view entheogens as part of this cultural uplift? Because it does guide us to, like, oh, gratitude, how beautiful to see patterns more.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a portal into, you know, unveiling the mystery. And it helps, as my films do, I think, making the invisible visible. I'm just trying to show people that there are alternate points of view in terms of time and scale. And, you know, having taken, you know, psychedelics in college, it's obviously influenced my filmmaking. I'm, you know, I get kind of bored at shooting at 24 frames per second, which is the reality that human beings look at life. You know, I pioneered time lapse so we could see how flowers look at the world, you know, and then slow motion with hummingbirds. How do they look at the world? All of them are valid and they're all incredible. And so whatever portal it takes to, you know, experience the divine. And I think that these, you know, sacred plants and mushrooms enable us to do that. Then, I'm all for it. But then I think the key question is, and it's true with any kind of psychedelic journey, is like the integration is really critical. If you have that aha moment and now you get it and now you understand how everything is connected, well, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to like change your life, your relationships with your friends and your family and the world? So the relationship, I think, between fantastic fungi, where I show the mycelial network, I talk about the psychedelic treatments at Johns Hopkins with cancer patients. I show how mushrooms can be a portal into that world, a world like the mycelial network where you know, ecosystems flourish by sharing nutrients and information without greed. Well, once you see that, what are you going to do about it? And for me, gratitude revealed, the universe, I think, wanted that to emerge as an example of the integration, the journey into the soul. If you have nature's wisdom in front of you, how do you integrate that or employ that into your life? That's the next step. And I think that's where we are right now.
Perfect. We're going to take a very short break, but it's a relevant break, Louis Schwartzberg, because it's the song from your movie, Gratitude, for a very short musical break, and we'll be right back after that. But let me remind you, you can see Louis is generously proffering his latest film, Gratitude Revealed, and that will be at the New Living Expo, and that will be, that's right, April 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., room 6 at the Embassy Suites in San Rafael, but you got to register first. And we'll be right back after a brief version of his song, Gratitude, from the movie. Here we go.
I am grateful for the air I breathe, the orange trees and the ocean breeze. It's a part of me, yeah. And I am thankful for the ones who surround me, stick around for me, take a chance on me, a second glance at me. 'Cause there are people I've yet to know, and there are people
fading out on that beautiful song, but you can hear the whole song in the movie Gratitude Revealed. Our guest today is Louis Schwartzberg. He is generously proffering his film Gratitude Revealed at the New Living Expo, newlivingexpo.com. You can find out where that is and register April 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., room 6 at the Embassy Suites, but you got to register first. All right, so here we are back. Yes, entheogens and integration. Yeah, no, I think that's so crucial, you know, with many journey groups. I was proffering some really great psychedelic songs to somebody who's been running different groups. And I go, this is part of our legacy, you know, this wisdom thing. And he goes, ah, that was before entheogens were repackaged as therapy. I'm like, ooh, that's a spicy discernment, right? Everything can be liberating or imprisoning, right? And it's like, that's good. The plants are going mainstream. But let's remember they're primarily a sacrament, even more than a therapy, right? Even more than a little safe thing, yeah. And then to integrate it as dedication.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. And so it is good that it's going through that process of, you know, medical, you know, as cannabis sort of did, you know, medical analysis and treatment so that it can eventually become decriminalized and maybe legalized with guardrails. I think it's great, but I totally agree with you that experiencing, you know, the divine, you know, in nature, for example, is how I initially had my first journeys. So one of the things I'm doing actually is I'm bringing my, you know, digital imagery of nature, of time lapse and slow-mo that really show the connectedness, and combining it with therapeutic treatments at the Pacific Neuroscience Institute in Santa Monica, for example, combining it with imagery and psilocybin to treat patients suffering from alcohol addiction, which is pretty ironic if you think about it, that we're using an illegal drug to treat people who are, you know, have alcoholic disorders, where billions of dollars is spent to get them to do that, you know, and so the results are super positive. And I'm also doing some clinical trials at UCSD and coming up at UCSF, where I really want to dial in and see like what parts of digital nature, forest, ocean, desert, flowers, what it does to what part of your brain and what part of your physiology. And I think that in a way it's very similar to the entheogens in that it alters time and scale, and it can make you feel, you know, connected to everything, to make you feel small in a grand universe. All of those things are wonderful, and the medicine that you get from, I think, sacred plants, which is a molecule which, you know, goes into your bloodstream, maybe isn't that different from light energy that hits the retina, which creates an electrical impulse that goes straight to the brain and opens up those, you know, endorphins to flow. So I love the idea of where we are and to be able to bring both of them, because imagine, Carolyn, if this doesn't replace, like, you know, taking a walk in the woods, but if you never listened to, let's say, digital music, if you said the only music I ever listened to is live music, then perhaps you might have never heard the Beatles, you know, and other great works mm-hmm. of art. So I think that in this digital world, with the technology and the way it's going, I'm just trying to leverage it in a real positive way and have that yep. sacred medicine be available to everybody, not just the people that are rich and have the time and money to go to places like Machu Picchu and Galapagos, you know, and Tahiti and Africa, which are sacred places. You know, why not potentially make that available for everybody in order to experience the sacred wisdom that these places have to offer?
No, that's great. And there's a million spirals off of everything you say. I love that, you know, Carl Jung and Bill Wilson were in dialogue, right, before Bill Wilson created Alcoholics Anonymous, or actually during. They said, you know, no recovery from addiction without a spiritual experience. But Bill Wilson was very pro psilocybin, right? And people who are in Alcoholics Anonymous may not know this, right? But he was like, this is fantastic, you know, and it's not the contradiction that you addressed. And he was encouraging Jung, come on, Carl, let's eat mushrooms together. And Carl said, I would, except every time you go into a deep entheo place, it gives you more work to do. And if I ever felt I was caught up, I would join you, Bill. But I'm just still catching up on what I've been assigned, which is charming, right?
I love that. So, I love that because that's so true. Like, that's the integration part. Like, if you get that vision of like what you need, to, what purpose you have, what you want to do in your life, you want to do something after you have that, you know, light bulb go off in your head. You want to do something about it to be the gift you were given. It's a responsibility and a burden, you know, because now you got to go out and do it.
Well, or responsibility, opportunity, but yeah, it's an assignment. It's an assignment, you know, been bequeathed.
Right. But the burden, I mean, it's not a bad burden. It's just, you know, you really got to knuckle down and do it. It's almost like, I think it was Bill Richards. I read in his book, you know, like a description of what the psychedelic journey is like. And it was almost like, imagine if you're at base camp and you're going to climb Everest. So you hop into a helicopter and you fly to the top and you get a glimpse of what it's like. Hmm. But then you come back to base camp and the next day you got to do the hike.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that's this interesting issue, right? Of gratitude can be spontaneous, but then cultivated and even earned. Right. And in your movie and your work, you know, Gratitude Revealed, there is like spontaneous gratitude as an intrinsic response to life and part of our kinship going, God, this is wonderful, I'm grateful. And then also cultivated, planted, earned, mm-hmm. dedicated. So when we go away from it going, blessing is the one form of engagement that is guaranteed replenishing and never depleting, right? And, you know, when we're grumpy, it's one of the early Kabbalistic, simple going, just get up in the morning and be grateful and bless everything above and below and the east and the west and the north and the south and receive blessing from everything above and below and from the east and the west and the north and south. And they said, if it feels like the slightest bit of effort, that's not it. The intrinsic nature of the universe is giving and receiving blessing, you know, which is the gratitude dance. So I do love that. And then what you're saying about crossing borders and the entheogens and the movies that you make, and they're all very kin. It's identifying with a bigger story, right, than our small story of grievance.
Right. Yeah. I love becoming present when you are able to, you know, look at that grand universe and feeling small, and just whether you're staring at a flower or you're staring at stars, and understanding how they're really one and the same rhythm, same patterns, same science, same everything. It's a very comforting feeling. And I think that what's beautiful about like the stuff at Johns Hopkins, as we saw in Fantastic Fungi, those cancer patients lost their fear of dying. A lot of people, that's their biggest fear, And so to be able to let go of that, or to be able to be comfortable with whatever that next part of the journey is a giant leap forward. In terms of mental health and physical health.
And that it may well be a continuation of the journey, as opposed to like oblivion, right? I die and I don't know, I'll be mad. It's like we do yearn for the continuation of something, and I think part of the gratitude, your exquisite parents, and we all know so many exquisitely cultivated, dedicated humans who've died, and it's like surely that must continue in some way, even if it's simply in our love for what they cultivated, But we hope for more. But the entheogens do tend to open that possibility that it is a journey, And I love people when sort of psychic, we gather from all over, but psychic said, he was asked, what happens when we die? And he said, nothing. It's like, well, that's a trippy idea too. Anyway, we like entertaining many, Jupiter says there's 20,000, 20, 30 stories going on at once, and they can be conflicting and all be true. Which one do we want to ride, right? Which one's a horse that we can ride, and we go, that's fun. But back to science proving folklore, in this riptide, right? It's that you're a fluencer of science and poetry and beauty, in harmony, not in conflict, right? And I love Stamets saying that what Johns Hopkins is kind of proving is that the psilocybe micro or macro calms down the amygdala, right? The reactive thing, increases cooperation in all the regions of the brain, and encourages curiosity, confidence, and kindness. And as he and you both say, those are leadership qualities, right?
Right.
That's what we want to. We want to inhale the authority we've outsourced, and then redefine the story of what's good leadership, and where do we find that in nature, and where do we see that? And I'm crazy about the phrase that I guess is alive now and in many of the books of people I've hosted recently, symbiotic mutualism. It's like just even to say that is fun. And I love Kirsten also. Yeah, just have a whole group of people going symbiotic mutualism. It's the sacrament of community, and I love Kirsten Olsen's wonderful book of examples of kindness and cooperation in nature. And she said three-way symbiotic mutualism. She said there's a plant that needs a particular fungi, but only if that fungi has been inoculated with a particular virus. And it's like, oh, that's so beautiful, right? We marvel going, right? And may it be a corrective to our species' glumpiness. Glump, glump, glump. It's like, no, intricate worlds and complex things, and align with that, cooperate with that, yeah? So yes.
I mean, look, the films that I make, with nature, like Fantastic Fungi, which is about, the mushrooms, and then Wings of Life about pollinators, bees, bats, hummingbirds, and butterflies. I mean, those were difficult films to get made because most nature docs are about predator versus prey, survival of the fittest, the macho story, BBC, Nat Geo, those are the kind of films that, the highest rated films always for Discovery is Shark Week, which is, again, all designed to press that fear button. But the grand story of nature is more, I would call it almost the feminine side. It's about regeneration, rebirth, connection, relationships, sharing. That is a beautiful story, as you just described, the complexity on the microscopic level of what is involved for life to go forward. is a great story, and it's the story we need. So we got to let go of the hijacked story that the imperialists used from Darwin, which was survival of the fittest. Darwin, being a botanist, primarily wrote about symbiotic relationships. That is the true story of nature.
Yeah, no, we're going full on Kropotkin, mutual aid, right? And you know, there's and that's why your chosen form of expression, you know, film, is so interesting. And way back in prehistory, Gerrymander wrote a book called, you know, Five Arguments for Abolishing TV. But he said film is reflected light, TV is projected guns pointing at you. So its bias is towards conflict and violence, because it's TV is best made for, you know, conflict contrast, whereas film is more dreamy.
I think technologically that's true, but in addition, I think that, you know, the creators behind the content, you can find, you know, certainly different content on different formats now. It's one of the reasons, Caroline, I created, which we're going to launch on 420, the Louis channel, my own kind of over-the-top channel, like a Netflix, like an HBO Max, that is going to be a place where films that celebrate life can be seen, short films on gratitude and fungi. And I even have Friends of Louis, where other, you know, top experts in the field of like underwater cinematography and animal behavior will put their movies. I have Louis Land for Children and Children's Hospitals. You know, there isn't a safe place to go, you know, in my opinion, where you can just get, you know, just uplifting content, and it's all for free, because why not use these incredible digital tools? Because the reality is that technology is pulling us in that direction, and we can't just say no one's going to look at their phones. And no one's going to be involved in spending more time on quote-unquote screens. It's all going to happen. And why not give them something nutritious as opposed to something that's toxic? Because, you know, the way this program, I think, opened before we got on was, who was it? Someone was quoting George Orwell, talking about
how... That was Howard Zinn.
Yeah, that, like, the way we talk about our history shapes our future. And whoever controls that conversation about our history controls our consciousness. And that's what 1984, I guess, was really all about. But that's what's kind of happening now. So I want to be able to fight fire with fire. If they're going to be pressing the fear button and get everyone addicted to this, like, you know, negative story, well, then the only way to fight that isn't logic and it isn't science. It's emotion. I got to, like, pull people back to the positive side. With beauty and love and gratitude, emotions that move you. It's an emotional thing. It can't be an intellectual thing, because they've got the fear button, which is more powerful to the brain, I think, I guess, than the art button.
Well, that's a mystery that we put to one side. But let me come back to be extremely practical for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, the movie channel you're creating, the Friends of Louis, where is this? Where can we find this now?
It's available actually now. You can check it out, louischannel.tv, which means you can download the app on your phone, but you can also download it on a smart TV, like if it's got an Apple TV or a Roku. It's in that app store, so you can watch it on a giant 4K and have your mind blown.
Excellent. Oh, that's great. Now you are spiraling ever greater influence into a welcoming culture. That is really good. Yes, hospital and things and TV. Yes. Never mind my, you know, film, TV. You're doing a great job. Magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, we'll use everything for a greater thing. Absolutely. Your own beautiful chart. You have a sun quintile Chiron, right? A Chiron little planetoid. Chiron is the civilizing intelligence of mentors, and it says they are in back of you, Louis. You carry the thing. And I never tire of, again, quoting friend Deborah Falmouth, saying, you know, in the West we think of the future in front of us and the past in back of us. Who cares? And she goes, in the Middle East, it's the reverse. And she said, we're gazing at the past in front of us and the future invisible in back of us, and we're crafting the future by gazing at the caravan of our past mentors. I go, I love that. Right. Beautiful. And so it just is a wonderful thing. And you're providing us so many mentors, human and not human. I mean, all that you honor, mm-hmm. and I want to, that's right, in our precious time, but we still have plenty. The time lapse is genius and full of implications. I want to kind of come back to that. But you are, you know, it's like Matthew Arnold said, to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. We go, that's a good start, but I want to take the human spirit out of it. What you're doing is to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of nature throughout time. And it's like, yeah, there's so many fantastic things that you are dedicated to that you reveal and bring us into intimacy. That's the real key. You know, you're guiding humans and us and reciprocally, you know, into intimacy, going, oh, you know, as opposed to grr, right? Yeah, more Kropotkin. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, thank you. I mean, look, if it touches, you know, here's the thing. I feel like if it touches my soul, it touches everybody's soul, because it isn't mm-hmm. just what I like or what I consider to be beautiful. It seems to be universal. You know, the rhythms and patterns of nature is universal energy that's like inside every cell of your body. It's inside the roots of a tree. It's like in the galaxies. I'm just showing you a reflection of who we are. And when that happens, it does touch, I think, your soul and becomes divine for everybody. It isn't anything that I create. It's just like I'm just really opening up the window so we can see it.
Yeah, and then time lapse. You know, it's like you're slowing time down by speeding it up. It's just a marvel. And yeah. Just something to aside, and then I want to bring it back to you because it's like, ooh. An herbal smart physician was saying, you know, we know that when our heart beats slowly, time slows down. And when our heart beats fast, time speeds up. So it's like, well, if you want more time. And the thing that I love, the picture on Facebook, it was a young girl in a wheelchair with cerebral palsy around horses. And the narrator said the horses sensed that her neurons were misfiring. And then we see the horses forming a circle around this young girl in her wheelchair, and they're slowing their hearts down. All the horses are slowing their hearts down to create this field that her body then syncs with and finds relief from the seizures. And it's like, oh, that's mm-hmm. beautiful.
So, that's incredible.
So time, yeah.
No, I mean, the time is certainly an illusion. It's certainly not the thing on your wrist that the clock. That is not time. And I think that, you know, entheogens and the fact that with my camera, I can show you that it's true. You know, I can show you the fact that the flower is not static, that it's dancing and opening and closing to the circadian rhythms of life, honoring the sun. It's seducing the bees, the bats, the hummingbirds to come to, you know, fertilize her because she needs to get laid because her biological clock is ticking. And she's using all the power of beauty and seduction to make it happen. And, you know, these are like amazing things that are happening that are invisible to our eyes. And when you can see it and understand it and appreciate it, it just like completely changes your worldview.
Yeah. And again, just this, you know, conundrum, the time-lapse photography is slowing down time by speeding it up. I'm just going, oh, this is so interesting. Yeah, and revealing the underlying dance and the rhythm. You know, I mean, I do know that when I would come back, you know, entheogenically enhanced to my house when I lived with an actual coyote, the coyote would go, now you're in my world. You are now mm-hmm. seeing what I see. It was very clear. And she's like, let's go out. I go, it's 3 a.m. And she goes, yeah, let's go out because now you're seeing what I'm seeing. And it's like, oh,
right.
Great.
Exactly.
And a lot of it has, yeah, kinship, intimacy.
Because before, well, I'm just saying before, you know, I did what I did with the time-lapse camera. It was only used like scientifically to show like a maybe a plant growing against the grid. I mean, I try to capture, you know, the beauty and the light moving to really, I think, open your heart. And if you described it in a book, well, you know, this is the reality of the flower or the bee and the hummingbird and all. It wouldn't mean anything. You have to see it to believe it. And when you see it, it's just so powerful. I mean, if I asked you, Carolyn, to like, I want you to stare at a rose for 24 hours and watch it open and close and just focus on that. I don't want a single thought to come into your brain. And you can't go to the bathroom either. You would say that's a really hard thing to do. But I can actually show you what that looks like and what that would feel like, which is really cool.
It's really cool.
You know, I've had these cameras going now nonstop, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 4 decades. And I've squeezed 40 years 40 years of filming into 20 hours of film.
Wow, that's so great. And then every now and then there are these quirky plants, like I have a night blooming cereus that will produce a downward facing blossom. And then one night you can see it. It actually opens and raises up and unfurls into an intricate mm-hmm. pattern and wafts out this perfume into the neighborhood that is seeking a moth that is extinct. It's very poignant. But anyway, there we go. So we have our last minutes here, Louis, or minute really, Louis Schwartzberg. I'm very grateful to your work, you know, and again, people can see your movie that you are generously proffering at Living Expo on April 14th, 6 to 8 p.m., room 6 at Embassy Suites Hotel. You have to sign up for it, newlivingexpo.com. But it's very minimal signing up money. It's very generous. So any last minute or blessing, 30 seconds of blessing or whatever you want to say, Louis Schwartzberg, teammate of all life?
Well, you know, I just hope we all kind of wake up and really perhaps realize this could be heaven on earth. And just, you know, take a fraction of our day, whatever that might be, and just really celebrate life and nourish it with our friends, family, and protect the planet we love. I think if we all lean in that direction, I think it's happening. I think there's a movement. You're really responsible, I think, for, you know, being a catalyst for that movement. The films I make are a catalyst for that movement. There may be a lot more of us than we think. So
yes,
let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Grateful to you, Louis Schwartzberg. Always grateful to Board Up, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey. See you all next week, perhaps Thursday. CoyoteNetworkNews.com for more. Thank you again, Louis. Off we go. Woof, woof.